Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 1st of April, recording at 8:53 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Okay, now this being Thursday, and tomorrow being Good Friday, which is a holiday in the UK, as is Monday, incidentally, Easter Monday, this is the last broadcast of the week and the last broadcast until Tuesday, the 6th of April. Now, therefore, it's also the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but I'll start with a quick review of the week. For stock markets, it's been pretty feisty. We've seen mostly strong action, and again today, the Asian stock markets started it off. Strength across the boards, really, and some of that's important. China breaking up out of a little consolidation. Well, I'll just continue with the review here of the week and come back to those points. Now, the European stock markets are also a firm, all up over 1%, and some of them up almost 2%. The exception is Switzerland, which has had a modest gain. Now, Wall Street has seesawed a little bit, but started with some reasonable gains, increased them, then lost most of it, and is picking up a bit towards the close, over half a point up on the Dow and the S&P, the NASDAQ lagging a little bit. And a strong move by Brazil. I wonder if that's a new all-time high, or at least a new bull market high for this particular secular move. I suspect it might well be. With the index at 71,177 as I speak. And in long-dated government bonds, well, it's been quiet, very quiet, and sort of mixed action. Not much going on here today. The U.S. Treasury is down a tiny bit. The European futures were up a wee bit. The U.S. dollar has had some choppy action in here today, but the big story really over the last week for currencies, I think, has been the weakness of the yen, the rebound that we've seen in the last few days by sterling, and also to a lesser extent the euro. And elsewhere, precious metals, some very good action, new highs for this cycle. In other words, the bull market from the, well, the resumption of the bull market following the lows that we saw down in October to December of 2008. So a new recovery high on this move for palladium and platinum. Silver is also strong here at 1790 as I speak. And gold is currently up $13.25. That takes it up to $1,126.50. So solid action there. It's been a stunning week for copper, which had a little bit of rest yesterday, but is firm again here today. The grains and beans were hit hard. I think that was on Wednesday. They fell back very, very sharply, either Tuesday or Wednesday, within their ranges. And those are the major highlights. The industrial metals, say, generally firm. Nickel has been on a bit of a tear, although it's a little quieter here today. Okay. So what's going on here? What do we make of all of it? Well, in terms of the Asian stock markets first, it's been a resumption of the overall bull trend following those big ranging consolidations, which represented reversions to the mean in terms of the rising 200-day moving averages. In other words, the trend mean. Now, they haven't all broken upwards, but those that haven't, such as South Korea and Malaysia, Singapore, but they appear poised to do so very, very soon. And I wouldn't be surprised if that very, very soon is next week. And we've seen some of the leaders throughout, and none more than Indonesia, powering ahead. Thailand has pushed well into new high ground for this cycle. So generally, very good action. Now, China, there's nothing new about that, incidentally, but China has picked up in here as well. It still has a progression of rising lows ever since that upside key day reversal that we saw on the 3rd of February. It has taken out the lost in the lower highs. It's consolidated above that level and pushed ahead in here again today. This is the China A shares. That has enabled a very good recovery to occur for the H, the China H share indices, which are the ones that most of us who invest in China actually trade. And that's the Hong Kong H share index. That had an upside key day reversal earlier this week, and as I said, has pushed ahead really quite strongly. Now, the European stock markets, I've mentioned, have been benefiting from the weak euro, in that that makes the European shares a little bit cheaper for people in most other countries. But more importantly is that investors recognize that for export markets such as Germany, it makes consolidated earnings in a softer euro just that much more attractive. So big infrastructure shares such as Siemens have just been bounding ahead, and Germany's exports to China are really booming. So good action there. Part of the reason for the strength is some good manufacturing data in here that we've seen throughout the week, with coming from both Europe, the United States, and also Asia. Now, what else to mention? Well, that's all positive. We do have the one negative that we have is a short-term overbought condition, but you can have that arise very, very quickly when a market changes direction. I'm talking about those stochastic indicators that you can see in the library. But so far, those short-term overbought conditions have been consolidated with rising trends, and there haven't been any downward dynamics in these stock markets. Now, at some stage, these will spill over into a consolidation and a reaction. I don't think we'll get another significant correction anytime soon, because stock markets had spent a number of months in that consolidation phase, building up support to sustain this current move. Now, April historically is often a good month, and since we had a strong March, if we had a strong April, that might well set us up for a pause in May or June. But investors will also be aware that next month, May, they'll be aware that we're entering a period which is usually less bullish for stock markets, thus leading to the sell in May and go away adage. But of course, that doesn't always work, and it was a disaster last year. So, in other words, stock markets were very strong in running up in that portion of the year. So, all in all, it's behaving very much like the cyclical bull market that we at Fuller Money have maintained that it is. Now, I think this can continue. First, it's developed some momentum. The long correction had made some people very nervous and had caused them to come out of positions. And I'm talking about institutional money now. And they have been scrambling back in on this move, and that resumed buying may not be over. Also, investors are light in equities relative to bonds generally. Now, in terms of data, this sort of data is not available for every country, but it is certainly available for the United States. And as you know, from that 2008 meltdown onwards, we had record buying of bonds by U.S. investors, or investors investing in the U.S., and we had actually seen drawdowns from the equity mutual funds. And my own view is that investors are quite overweight in bonds, and that equities will benefit and are benefiting now from some switch back towards the stock markets around the world. So that's favorable action. We still have historically low short-term interest rates in most countries, and certainly in the OECD countries. We do not have soaring long-dated government bond yields. I suspect that will happen at some point, but it's the crucial fact today is that it's not happening now. The crude oil price could become a concern. If anything becomes a concern soon, well, it's hard to predict that in advance, but my guess is that it might be crude, which is at $85 as I speak. So crude has broken up out of its ranging pattern, but it's not in an area that would present a significant headwind for equities, and it has been helped by a somewhat softer U.S. dollar. And that, so to wrap up on equities, it's a favorable environment overall. Now, I don't know how long this is going to run on for, and neither does anyone else, but the key point is that it is behaving very much like a cyclical bull market. Other than a short-term consolidation, I don't see anything that's likely to derail it on the horizon. Short-term consolidation and the fact that we are approaching a less attractive period seasonally. So I'm content to hold my positions, and I've actually increased them a little bit. I would mention that if investors are nervous, if they are concerned, do it while markets are running strongly on the upside if you wish to raise a little bit of cash. I always favor buying following setbacks, and that reversion to the mean in terms of the rising 200-day moving average was the last important setback buying opportunity. If you buy today, then you are momentum buying in here, and it's never terribly wrong to take a profit in a roaring market if you feel inclined to do so, whereas I think it is a big mistake to be taking losses or chopping much reduced gains when markets are taking an absolute beating. We haven't seen that for a while, fortunately. Okay, enough said on that. In terms of long-dated government bonds, the debate really is whether quantitative easing, which I think will continue, whether they say so or not, will keep yields down quite low. There are some people who are more pessimistic than that and feel that we will see the U.S. move into some sort of double-dip recession in 2011, 2012. Well, that's conjecture at this stage. It's too difficult to predict that far in advance accurately. But if we did get a double dip recession, then it's quite likely that long-dated government bond yields would remain low due to quantitative easing, quite probably, but also due to the additional deflationary pressures that people would be expecting. Now, the flip side of that is that the global economy, which has been improving, thus the manufacturing that I cited earlier on, led, of course, very much by the Asian emerging markets and the resources markets. So there is a very good possibility that we get the global economy synchronized in a period of expansion, albeit with the OECD economies, that's pretty much the West plus Japan, very much lagging in that move, but strong enough growth so that central banks are emboldened to withdraw a little bit more liquidity, and commodity prices might well flare up a little bit more, causing some inflationary concerns that would push long-dated government bond yields higher. Now, they are one of the canaries in the coal mine that I have referred to. If we were to see, for instance, the U.S. 10-year yield, which I think is probably around somewhere around 3.85, but don't hold me precisely to that number, but it's not far off it. If we see that push above the 4% yield, U.S. 10-year treasuries, if we see that yield go much above 4%, that might well change the psychology. Now, that would not be a problem for equities at that stage. My guess is that it would actually help equities a bit, with more people switching from bonds to the stock market. But if we start to get back up to 5% to 5.5%, I think that would become most definitely a headwind for stock markets. Now, long-dated government bond yields aren't the only factor, so we would want to see other factors or see what other factors applied at the time as well. But I do feel that that would be, say, sustained break above 4%, that would represent a caution light saying that we may be approaching a different type of environment. And certainly five and a half, I would regard that as potentially risky for equities, and definitely a good time to be lightening a little bit in anticipation of that, if we get closer to those levels. We're not today. This is still a benign environment for equities. It's a flat environment for long-dated government bonds, not much going on there. Now, what about commodities? They are still highly correlated to these U.S. stock markets, the industrial commodities at any rate. They had been held up somewhat and had been more volatile as a consequence of the earlier reaction to the mean conversion by stock markets and also the dollar's strength. The dollar's strength is dissipating, as I've mentioned before. It dissipated, in other words, melted away, reversed, first against the resources currencies and the Asian currencies that are not pegged to the US dollar. The real story in currencies over the last few months was less of dollar strength, but more of euro and sterling weakness. But those became both very overextended with these sort of quantum leap forecasts to the downside, which always tell you that the crowd is short and cheerleading. And we're seeing some short covering there now. So the dollar is nowhere near as strong as it's generally credited with being, and I think that's what's opened the door to new highs for palladium and platinum. And if they maintain those breaks to new recovery high ground, and I suspect they will, then I would think that gold would be moving above that $1,150 level fairly soon. It could do it next week. And that would get people salivating in the gold market once again, and I think they'd start to forget about IMF sales and all those stories, which I hope are silly, and suspect they're mostly silly about titanium-covered gold bars and ETFs being Ponzi schemes and so on. Don't hold it against me if one or two ETFs prove to be a little bit dodgy. That's unfortunately the way things go in financial markets. There are scams and scandals. Certainly the majority of them that are run by big banks such as HSBC, I would think are extremely sound. But at any rate, point I want to make is that get gold above the $1,150 level, and I think sentiment will definitely improve. It's already starting to improve, and that could really be quite interesting for bullion and also for gold shares. It was quite interesting today that I think it was Newcrest that had bid for Lee here, the Australian gold miner, and that led to a 30% pop on the upside for Lee here, and that's helped the HUI Gold Bugs Index to push ahead. And if that sparks any other takeover activity, that would finally get that gold sector moving, which has lagged way behind bullion. In other words, where bullion is well above its 2008 peak, the which was at a thousand and 40, the gold shares have lagged and are still, or the gold indices have lagged and are still fair way below their 2008 peak. Okay, moving on. So I like the precious metal sector. Still, the industrial metal sector also, again, highly correlated to what stock markets are doing, is still, and that's not surprising because the same people are buying in both markets. That's me, a lot of you, and plenty of bigger boys. Bigger boys than me, at any rate, out there in terms of some of those hedge fund activities and so on. What else to mention? Crude oil. I feel that fundamentally, well, you know that demand is moving up a bit, global demand overall, or that's what the data shows. Although it has been declining in the United States for a while because of that natural gas, the shale gas that has been available. That is also natural gas, but it's unconventional natural gas, and it's a new industry. It's only 10 years old, and the production has only really increased significantly in the last few years. But it is a potentially very bullish factor for the global economy moving ahead, and that assumes that we do not get any environmental shocks or too many alarm stories regarding the fracturing process to release the shale gas. So if concerns over possible groundwater pollution prove to be relatively minor, then this is going to be a very, very big industry. And I know some people are still saying, well, look, some of the production tends to tail off fairly quickly after a year, but this is a new industry, a new technology. If the gas is there, we now know that they know enough in terms of how to get it out. And I suspect they will continue to do so. I'm often asked, how does one invest in the shale gas industry? Well, I would be much more inclined to invest in the areas that benefit from the shale gas industry, and that's the global economy. So in terms of global infrastructure development, that's one of the obvious beneficiaries overall. And just as when China was underperforming for long stretches, a lot of people would say, well, if you want to participate in China's growth, participate in the markets that supply what China actually needs. That's still a good story today, although China has come into its own in terms of performance more often than not, as you know. And I think it looks interesting again today. Well, I think that's pretty well covered the bases that I wanted to touch on with you, except for the grain and bean complex. They got whacked, as I mentioned in the review, earlier in the week. And that's good news for the global economy. It means that agricultural price inflation, there are little isolated instances of it, but not in these staple foods, rough rice, soybeans, corn, wheat, we don't see it. Again, say that's very, very good news for the global economy. It means that we don't have those inflation pressures building up. It means that people have more money to spend on disposable goods. If we get a commodity inflation, we're more likely to see it from crude oil, but I suspect that will be due as much to investment and a somewhat softer dollar as to an actual pickup in demand. And that's a wrap for this week. We've got the holiday period coming up, as I mentioned in the beginning of this broadcast. So enjoy yourselves if you're taking a little bit of time off. And the chart library, of course, never sleeps. This is not a bad time to be reviewing the areas of interest. And you will find now in the really big news that we have today at Fuller Money is a much improved library search engine. It's finally been combined. And some more items there, which Owen has written about. Enjoy. All the very best to all of you.